All right, welcome back to the late edition for a Friday. As promised, we're going to talk about the international scene. And if you've been following the news at all, you know that it's one hot spot after another around the world. But one that is much overlooked and a very dangerous one is the growing tensions between India and Pakistan over that much disputed region of Kashmir. And some are saying that India and Pakistan are headed headlong into another war over the dispute as the tensions heat up there, and we're going to talk about those again because we are joined now by Imran Anwar, founder of Imran Net Services in New York, pioneer of internet email in Pakistan, and of course a well-known media expert on India, Pakistan, and Southeast Asia. Hi, Imran.
Good afternoon, George.
Good to talk to you. Let me ask you, first of all, what's the status? I know they held a press conference, the Prime Minister of India today. I think the idea is to assure the world that India is not going to invade Pakistan, to kind of come in the back way against the rebel forces in Kashmir. But what is the status, and what is the latest?
George, as usual, I mean, the spot has been a trouble spot for the last 50 years. This problem has gone on this long. The countries have always been at odds in general. Things are really out of hand as far as whether it's just posturing or is there a serious threat of war. I'm sorry to report that, in my opinion, the two countries are closer to war than the world seems to realize. Now, the Prime Minister of India making that statement is actually doing two things. They are sending mixed signals and trying to have it both ways. The statement in a public press conference makes it sound like India is not doing any warmongering, whereas other members of Congress, none of whom would speak without the permission of the head of state, of course, and members of cabinet have clearly stated an intention and seeing nothing wrong with and even potential benefits to invading Pakistan, going over the so-called line of control in Kashmir. That basically means attacking in Pakistan in a direct frontal assault, which of course would mean Pakistan would open the borders at other spots if it had to defend itself.
Well, let me bring the folks up to date just a bit, because we're getting so far ahead of my think here on this. You and I know what we're talking about. I think some of the folks may be a little less sure of what's going on. But okay. In Kashmir, there is this line of demarcation, as you say, that divides the state, not quite in half, and about 40% of Kashmir, what would be the northwestern 40%, I guess, would belong to Pakistan. And they had a war in was it 87? I know they had a war over this, and this is where the line of demarcation was drawn. In any case, and the other part belongs to India. Meanwhile, am I correct? Some separatist, I guess we'll call them freedom fighters or rebels, have entrenched themselves in some very, very difficult areas, mountainous regions overlooking areas that owned by India in Kashmir, and they are attempting to unlodge them. Now, those separatists would be supported by, obviously, either directly or indirectly, certainly emotionally, by the Pakistanis. And the idea is that some military strategists are saying this is just such a tough job to work your way through these mountains and dislodge these guys that the best thing to do would be to kind of go around behind them and come up behind them. But you would then have effectively invaded with an Indian army the Pakistani-owned areas of Kashmir. Is that a correct summary of where we're at here?
Absolutely, and the only modification I would make to that would be the use of the word Pakistan and India controlled territories as opposed to owned.
Yeah, controlled.
Because
okay.
Both countries basically have claim to the whole state of Kashmir.
Which, and historically, of course, that's the dispute, but it leaves us in an interesting circumstance. Now, let me ask this, I mean, in terms of the international community trying to figure out how to deal with it, but let me ask this, because there are a lot of nuances here. First of all, let us say, and it's going to be, if they stick to this, from what I understand militarily, at great cost to Indian troops, if they stick to their word and they do not take the easier route and come in and come from the backside against the freedom fighters and stay on the Indian side and do all their fighting. Where does that leave us then in terms of the tensions? Will the Pakistanis say, you know what, we respect that, or is it going to matter?
It will not really matter, George, because the fact of the matter is that, as you and I have spoken in the past, this issue has been there forever. And
well, let me put it, and I mean it this way, Imran, in terms of igniting, one would have to believe that if India goes into Kashmir on the Pakistani side, that might be the catalyst for a full-blown war. Right now, they're not really fighting Pakistan. They're fighting rebels.
Exactly.
That may be emotionally and maybe otherwise that we couldn't say, but certainly emotionally supported by Pakistan. But if they go into the Pakistani side of Kashmir, then in essence, that would be an act of war. We would then almost certainly have another war, wouldn't we?
Absolutely. And that is what Pakistan is banking on, too. And I am not saying that is a good bet, but it's posturing as much as a full-fledged intention to go to war if one of the sides takes action like that. India would like to believe that Pakistan's army is physically involved, that Pakistani soldiers are part of this freedom-fighting guerrilla insurgency. However, Pakistanis are very cognizant of the fact that world opinion depends a lot upon their providing any kind of moral slash even occasional material support, I'm sure, but ensuring that there is no, quote, provable link directly, as if it's because otherwise you are waging war on India is the problem that the Pakistanis would have.
And
the risk here is that the Pakistanis became nuclear powers last year, subsequent to India's nuclear detonations. Pakistan then realized that this gave them a lot more leverage in the world, based upon the fact that United Nations resolutions have existed for about 50 years. That would give the Kashmiris the right to determine their own fate. Those resolutions have been swept under the rug all these years, and India does not want any discussion on those.
Well, let me ask about that, because we're heading into a very interesting time in this world, it seems to me, and it may be maybe a disruptive, dangerous one. There might be questions to be asked. The fact is that Kashmir has traditionally, over history, been a state of India. Am I correct?
India was one big country which included all of Pakistan and Bangladesh.
Now here's the point. Every time a group gets disenchanted with the majority culture, are we to say in this new environment and this new world that they should have some automatic right to separate off? I mean, that's a very tricky question, isn't it? I mean, it strikes to the heart of problems in a lot of countries. And maybe ultimately even in the United States, are we to say that they have the right to do that? Or is it contingent upon brutal mistreatment? I mean, how would you define that?
That's a very good point. Here's how I would suggest looking at it. When you look at the United States, it's a very homogeneous society. Yes, we have different kinds of people. People speak with a southern drawl, or mm-hmm. they might have a clipped New York accent, or you might even have a Brooklyn accent, if you want. However, it's still a homogeneous society. It's a good hodgepodge of cultures, religions, economic and social levels of people. Canada is another example where you do have something like that going on, just based upon language. And that is happening right under our very eyes and under our noses. Now, the same thing when it happens in a country like Iraq, where the Kurds are not happy being a minority, we sort of are helping the Kurds have their own little mini state within a state by enforcing no-fly zones. However, we're not doing that when the Turkish people or the Turkish government does even worse atrocities against the Kurds that live in Turkey. So, you know, the whole world has this up and down sort of, depending on whatever is politically expedient at any given time.
Well, there are certain pragmatic things that you face, but let us try to smooth them out a little bit. And let's say...
With Kashmir to remember is, India was one undivided huge region.
Mm-hmm.
When the British left, it was decided that the Muslim majority areas would become Pakistan. All Muslim majority areas would become Pakistan. all Hindu majority areas would become Hindustan, or what is now called India.
Mm-hmm.
Bangladesh was really part of Pakistan, and it was West and East Pakistan is how it was created.
Right.
Bangladesh being East Pakistan. So this was the creation of a state in two different parts of the world, really, just because the rule was Muslim-majority areas go to Pakistan.
Something like they're trying to do with the Palestinian state in Israel, separated by the...
Exactly.
Israel separates the West Bank region and the Gaza region.
Exactly.
Yeah.
However, Kashmir, which was 97% Muslim, had a governor or a ruler who was Hindu, one individual against several million people.
Mm-hmm.
And this person said, oh, I would prefer to stay with India, which was fine. If he was just driving over the border in his horse-drawn buggy, it would not have been a problem.
Yeah.
He basically imposed his will, and India then imposed its will on those people who had been given the right first at the time of partition to go with Pakistan and should have automatically gone. Since the dispute erupted, the United Nations then stepped in at India's request, is the interesting part here. It was India that went to the United Nations. The United Nations then passed a resolution saying that the people will have the right to determine their own fate. And that is a resolution that has been on the books for 50 years, and India does not accept that. The interesting important thing to note here is that when you look at the two countries' stances on this issue, India claims Kashmir as an integral part of India without regard to what the original decision had been in 1947 and what the United Nations resolutions say. Pakistan does not make any such claim. Pakistan clearly states that it would like the people to follow the United Nations resolutions, because Pakistan can bet about 85%, I think, that the people will choose to come to Pakistan.
Yeah, obviously we all do that. Countries, people. I mean, if the majority relationship was different, Pakistan would probably be in a different camp. But let's talk about what is. And let me ask about this.
That's what they're basing their stance on, principle, that we're not saying give it to us.
Yeah.
We're saying is let the people decide as they were supposed to.
But that's the same problem.
Knows for sure there's a 99% chance they will lose it, which is close to 100% if you look at the fact that there's a military presence there which has been very aggressive, and people have disappeared, people have been killed, people have been imprisoned, and there have been slave camps, etc. So based upon that, India knows that it's a lost cause as soon as they agree to United Nations resolutions. Hence, they don't want any discussion.
Let me ask about a couple of things, then. They have it for some reason, and I know we've talked, these things are a bit convoluted at times, but it seems to me that they have the India... Mm-hmm. has the sympathy of certainly the West, if not, I don't know about how it breaks down internationally, but certainly the West at this point on this issue. Now, why is that?
That is a very good point, George, because you would expect that if Pakistan did a better job of marketing the issue, the people would realize, but so few policymakers, even I have spoken to policymakers in Washington, and they know that there was something in, you know, it was discussed in the United Nations, but nobody, in possibly it's a failure of Pakistani diplomats. Now, some of them are people I have been friends with, and I am friends with, and I have no hesitation in saying, if your job is to market your country's issues, then you have failed. The I see here is that the United States is playing a very dangerous game right now. The United States has always had Pakistan as an ally in a very, very unstable part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Pakistan has waged proxy war on behalf of the United States with the Soviet Union in Afghanistan. Pakistan has been a conduit for actions in even diplomatic efforts within Iran. Pakistan was the gateway for opening the doors to China.
Well, that asks the question again, because you're right. First of all, we've had a closer or warmer relationship with Pakistan.
Right.
India has had much closer philosophical and, I guess, economic ties and philosophical ties with the Soviet Union through the Cold War in many ways. And so the question, and as you've said, Pakistan has been kind of our ally in that region, a very tense region. So what is it about this situation that tips us in the direction of India?
The unfortunate fact, George, is that it's not these what is special about the situation. The fact is that it's pragmatism at its best or worst, however you look at it.
Let me read.
Is the expendable ally.
Let me read something to you that and you react to it. You respond to it, because in a recent edition of The Economist, there are some quotes that indicate that they have captured some tapes of conversations between a couple of top Pakistani generals, played to reporters in Delhi, suggesting that that these generals are in power, not the politicians. Now, the Pakistan government has said that's this whole thing is a mock-up. But is it possible that that's what the West has information about, that the West believes that this is the that the political factions in Pakistan are really being held at bay by the more militant factions, by the military itself, and that's why we're kind of tipped emotionally in the other direction? Or is this a sham?
10 years ago, George, that would have held true. This is the first time in recent history where India has this series of unstable governments, and Pakistan has a very stable, very strong, almost to the point of elected dictator level government with Nawaz Sharif, and he has actually succeeded, much to the chagrin of a lot of people, in ousting Supreme Court justices, in ousting outspoken critics, in actually ousting generals and admirals at will, and he really is holding the reins of power totally in his hand. As a matter of fact, to the extent that he's almost a dictator at this stage, an elected one, though. So 10 years ago, it would have held true. Today, it does not. The important thing here is that even if there was a conversation taking place between generals, they have secure channels. They would not discuss them because they know where this can lead. They know that interception facilities are available. They know technological warfare is being fought even more than a war on the battlefield. The fact of the matter is that, yes, the government of Pakistan would definitely want to aid and abet the guerrillas and the freedom fighters. The interesting thing that we should never forget is that the U.S. and Pakistan have been closer allies always with the aid of the United States, of the generals being friends with the United States. It's always the dictators, the military dictators in Pakistan, who have led to strong relationships with the West, because America has been able to use them to wage proxy wars, and you don't have to deal with an elected government. So, interestingly, in this case, if the generals were really running the show, you could believe it that they would have a stronger relationship with the United States and would be doing the U.S.'s bidding at this stage.
Well, the big worry, of course, in the world is that both are nuclear powers. Nobody wants to see this escalate into something that gets, where nuclear weapons might be used, certainly. But it doesn't seem like there's any resolution to this thing. We're almost out of time, but what are you looking for? How does this, at least this current incident, how does it resolve itself?
The basic thing was the United States had a great opportunity, which it seems to be squandering, and the representative of President Clinton, who is there, instead of clearly saying, why don't you go back to the drawing board, do the United Nations resolution and solve this problem, or it will be solved for you. They are playing a dangerous game. They are telling Pakistan to back off, which is basically going to squeeze Pakistan and leave them no option but to say, well, it's a do-or-die situation. I do not want to live to see that day.
We will be talking about it more, unfortunately, I am sure, Imran, and I say that because I'd like to see this situation resolved, but it's not one that looks likely to be resolved in a very short time. Thanks much, as always, for joining us, and have a great weekend.
Thank you.
That's Imran Anwar, founder of ImranNet Services in New York, pioneer of Internet email in Pakistan, well-known media expert on India, Pakistan, and Southeast Asia. We'll take a break and come back with more of the Late Edition on GEM Radio.